is recording. I can pause it.
PMG.
Corporate Services, Chapel Gazi, Acting Director General,
Madam Commissioner, Corporate Services.
I'm George Mugwini from Corporate Services. So this is the only chicken starter of mine.
Kholi Lembonambi, Mine Health and Safety.
Michael Liberalton,
Mineral Regulation, DMR.
Mosa Mabuza, Mineral Policy and Promotion, DMR.
Kwazim Song, Office of the DG, DMR.
Nandimisa Zulu, DMR.
Donna De Vries, Consultant to Cecil.
Jeremy Michael, DMR Communications and International Coordination.
Thank you. Honorable member, you've just joined us. Can you introduce yourself, please, and the lady in front of you?
Good morning, everybody. My name is Chris Hululu. I'm a member of this committee. Thank you very much.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Ayanda Boss from Committee Section.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, I hope that everybody has got a copy of the program. Has it been distributed? Yeah, that would entail our work for the second term. Indeed, the business of today is to listen to the Department of Mineral Resources on its budget vote, which is budget vote 21. This is in preparation for the main presentation of this budget by the minister in the House, as we all are aware, in terms of the program that will be done in the EPC on the 22nd in the afternoon at 1400 hours if there are no changes to that program, and that will be sitting at the old assembly chamber. But then the programming committee felt it necessary that we get an opportunity to engage with the broad overview of the budget vote, so that when we listen to the minister giving us the motivations and further details on the 22nd, at least we've got the basis of the direction that the department is taking. And indeed, would allow the department to therefore take us through. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members of the committee. We've prepared a presentation on the departmental vote, and it's a pleasure for us to present it to the committee. I think the first time is DMR as a standalone department, effective from the 1st of April, following the split, and that will be reflected in the discussions and deliberations of the vote. The department is divided into those number of programs: Program 1, Administration; Program 2, Mine Health and Safety; Program 3, Mineral Regulation; and then Program 4, Mineral Policy and Promotion. And the different heads of the programs will, when we get to that part, present the detailed discussions around the vote allocation and the key projects that they will be pursuing. That is the structure of the department following the split, headed by the Minister, Director General, supported by Audit Services, and then the line function, Mine Health and Safety, Mineral Regulation, Mineral Policy and Promotion, supported by Corporate Services and the CFO. The following slide captures the broad overview of the budget allocation to the department, departmental total. I think we see there's just over 1 billion allocated to the department, and 40% of that, as we go through the detail, will obviously be transferred to state-owned entities, and roughly 60% for departmental use and pursuing programs that will be outlined in the discussion. The following slides will go into detail for each program and what will be the activities. Katenga is running ahead of me. At the bottom of the slide is just an indication, change to 2009 budget estimate for the split, reflecting the total allocation to the Department of Minerals and Energy, and post-split what remains. The METF period with the two departments still together was ending on 2011 and 12, and that's what is reflected there. And then the 32 million on 2012 and 13 reflects the increase on budget from 2011 and 12 for DMR alone. So that's just the overview of the budget. The next slide looks at the budget in terms of the classification for the entire department, 239 million allocated for administration. And then mine health and safety, 145 million. And then mineral regulation, 216 million. And then mineral policy and promotion, 429 million. The bulk of the money in that program, obviously, and that are going for state-owned entity transfers to the tune of 361 million. Next slide. Just go back, Chair, if you look at the, I think just the classification, if we look at the top there, current obviously talking to compensation and remuneration of employees, also covering goods and services. So if you look at administration, for example, 224 million of the 239 million will be mainly for staffing departments and also for use of goods and services, and 13.5 million for capital expenditure, with the understanding that currently we're moving into a new building, and there will obviously be a need to expend some money to set the less environment. And the same allocation, if we look at the different programs, the money divided accordingly. I think the different programs will go into more detail. Program one, CFO will help us with that, corporate management and human resources.
Thank you, TG. Morning, Honorable Member Chairperson. The key activities on program one that I will be talking to basically refer to those that are done within the CFO's office, and then the other colleagues from corporate services will cover the HR related as well as the compliance monitoring and communication activities. Just in terms of the first activity that relates to the implementation of the accommodation plan, as the acting DG indicated in his introductory remarks, the department has been planning and is in the process of finalizing the relocation of the head office to a new, more suitable and adequate accommodation environment. So we will be focusing on making sure that our revised structure talks to the needs analysis that we have done previously, in as far as matching that with a suitable office accommodation. time, you basically would be looking at a totally different picture in terms of it talking to some of the technology that is available at the time. So we always need to keep up to speed because we're working in a very fast-growing technological environment where, as a department, we need to be able to engage with our stakeholders at that level and provide the necessary information accordingly. The item that talks to the development and implementation of a disaster recovery plan, we have done a disaster recovery plan in the last financial year, and going forward in this coming year, we would really be looking more at the implementation side of it. And just to break it down a bit, this talks to issues like having ensured that we've got proper backup systems in place in case there is a disaster, our building catches fire, we can be able to continue the next day with business as if nothing had happened. That also talks to having a disaster recovery center in place where you almost have a duplication of your environment as it is currently so that all your systems can continue operating also in the case of a disaster. So we'll be working with CETA in terms of making sure that that process is implemented. Then the next item that relates to the implementation of the master systems plan, this is where we look at our strategy and say this is where the department is going in terms of its activities or as business. And then from an IT point of view, we then match that business strategy and come up with what we call an ICT strategy that then begins to say if, for example, in the process of licensing, there is a need to improve turnaround time, how can ICT play a role in making sure that those turnaround times are met, because most of these processes are also done on computer systems. So you would look at the type of system that you require, the kind of infrastructure that you need, and then overall that whole process, we refer to it as the master system. So we'll be reviewing that and making sure that it's aligned to our new strategy and also beginning the process of implementing some of those system outcomes or gaps that are identified in that analysis process. The more operational item would be the next one that talks to provision of office supplies. This is later on when we present the slide on the budget for Program 1, members would see that the bulk of that budget goes to goods and services, and that talks to some of these items that sit on this item where we're talking about provision of furniture, relocation of offices into new buildings. That becomes quite a major cost driver in terms of buying those particular items. And then lastly, we talk to the annual financial statement, and we put it at a broader level, but within that item, we would be looking at things like how do we ensure that our processes are geared up for proper reporting at year end, and we are in a position to provide the auditor with adequate supporting documents to demonstrate that there is indeed proper financial management within the department. And the opinion that comes from the Auditor General in as far as how fairly do our financials present the state of financial affairs, they would then give an indication based on the information that we provide to them. So while this does not require financial resources in terms of appointing external consultants or getting goods from somewhere, we'll be using our own internal resources to drive that process, but it's quite one of those key deliverable areas that we have identified within the program. I will now, with your permission, Chair, hand over to my
I got distracted a bit. I was interested on your bullet point 3, the disaster recovery plan.
take us through the human resource aspect of the board?
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. My presentation will focus mainly on the HR-related stuff. You'll remember that at some stage I did make a presentation on the split process, the options that you've adopted as a department for the interim and both for the end state. I must say that we are happy to report that the old DME department has now been split into two, effectively from the 1st of April. We have created two personal systems, and we've matched and placed, you know, our employees, and everybody you see here is appearing on the structure of the new Department of Mineral Resources. What remains, Chairperson, to be done is the implementation of the approved organization and establishment structure. I must say that immediately after our strategic planning session, we did review, you know, our organizational structures to realign them to our mandate, to the key objectives and the priorities as agreed upon at the strategic planning session. The Minister of Public Service and Administration has concurred with our structure, and we are now embarking on a revision of, you know, our HR plan. Our HR plan will tell us about our future needs in as far as HR capital is concerned, to enable the new Department of Mineral Resources to deliver on its mandate. It will also focus on the organizational development aspects, with you know, more emphasis on the core values of the department, which we have adopted, being ever to pay, being you know, a good ethics, values such as honesty, integrity, accountability, professionalism, and Ubuntu. That is meant like eight, to put it in Africa. So we'll be conducting workshops within that area to ensure that all employees that have been matched and placed on the new DMR structure live by those values, and whatever service they deliver to the public out there, they deliver them in accordance with the core values that we've adopted at our strategic planning session. Chairperson, we also have what we call a talent management strategy that will enable us to attract or to recruit and retain staff, because you know that we find ourselves in an environment where there is an acute scarcity of skills, you know, relating to geologists, mineral laws, economists, and so on. So we have to implement this talent management strategy to ensure that there is retention of capacity within the new Department of Minerals and Energy. For those employees that are already in the department, we have to implement our workplace skills plan, which
standard risk management program of analyzing risk and identifying mitigating strategies and obviously monitoring them. We are further going to enhance the system in terms of developing the monitoring and evaluation framework around our strategy. And that will enable us to look not only at the risks surrounding the current events of implementing strategy, but also saying that how do we ensure that our ongoing operations contribute to our long-term outcomes. So we'll be developing a system that will enable us to monitor that on a long-term basis so that we do actually achieve the outcomes that we intend to. From a fraud prevention perspective, as my colleague mentioned earlier, there's the issue around conducting core value workshops and increasing awareness internally and externally around issues relating to fraud with the processes within the department. I think it's key for that to be elevated in order for a greater understanding to be created around the potential issues surrounding the processes within the department. So that would be one of the key projects. In terms of monitoring state-owned enterprises, we will be looking closer at aligning the planning processes within the entity with that of the department, so that by the time we get to the point where we are producing final strategic planning documents, there is closer alignment between the entities and the department. And also throughout the year, once the strategies have been approved, monitoring ongoing implementation to ensure that there's not too much disparity between what we said we're going to achieve and what we actually do at the end of the year. I think those are the main issues around those two items. And for the communication area, I'll hand over to my colleague, Mr. Jeremy Michael.
Thanks, Chairperson. The area of communications, of course, the Department of Mineral Resources is a new department, and of course we inherit the positives of the former DME. Added to that, the industry is facing some serious challenges. So we're developing a communication strategy and a plan to achieve a few key objectives. Amongst those would be to obviously communicate the work of the department in the various programs, mine health and safety, policy and promotion, mineral regulation, to all our stakeholders on the various communication platforms that we have. Also, internal communication is crucial for the facilitation of the flow of information internally and also to motivate staff and so on. One of the major challenges for both the department and the industries is also the image of mining in South Africa. The positive contribution of mining to the economy and socioeconomic development is often overlooked. We've identified that, and together working with the industry, we're developing a communication strategy basically to communicate the industry strategy that's being developed to stakeholders, to project a more positive image of the industry, also to address the negative perceptions related to mining, and then obviously communication with mining communities and labor sending areas is crucial, and also to promote international investment in the sector. So we're developing a strategy to towards achieving those objectives, both as the department and working with industry. Thanks.
To be able to implement all those programs, there needs to be a budgetary underpinning, which the CFO will take us through the details of thereof.
Okay, thank you, DG. The last two slides, as the DG mentioned, basically giving us a summary at a very high level of what budget has been made available for this administrative function to basically deliver on all those things Program 1, the two main branches, the Office of the CFO and Corporate Services, where the Office of the CFO includes functions like supply chain management, expenditure management, financial planning and budgeting, as well as IT, whereas on Corporate Services you have your HR function, strategic risk and monitoring, legal services, communication ministry, and the Office of the DG. So the budget that we're presenting here basically covers those areas. And on this slide, the compensation of employees, the numbers, I won't necessarily go through them, but as you can see, there's quite a steady increase. And I think it's also important to indicate that the budget that we have for sure, that is confirmed, it would be the 2010-11. 11, 12, and 12-13 are still subject to change because we'll still go through the cycle again where we go to National Treasury and present our bills. And that would also come here for final approval. So on the use of goods and services, the amount there appears to be relatively high perhaps in comparison to other programs. This is due to the centralized approach that we have adopted as a department in as far as provision of certain services is concerned, like computer services where we're getting services from CETA. All those costs get paid out of the Program 1 budget. Office accommodation costs for the head office and the regional offices, all that budget, those costs are budgeted for under Program 1. So we took a view that for better control and also to allow the night function to focus on what they need to be delivering for the country, we would have those managed and budgeted for within corporate Program 1. The payment of capital assets, this really looks at things like our furniture. We have a government policy in reporting that looks at every asset that we buy that costs more than 5,000 rand is considered to be a capital asset. So if there is a laptop that we purchase, that would be classified for reporting purposes as a capital asset. So that's the type of budget that we have provided for that. And finally, the transfers would be looking at a combination of some of the levies that we have to transfer to municipalities, as well as the condolences that the department pays to families of deceased employees in the event that we have such a situation. Then the next slide presents the same information just per sub-program within the administrative. I went through some of the components that reside within administrative functions. So you have the Office of the Minister there with its budget management, which looks at every employee from chief director upward. So we group them in that particular way, and the budget implications or the funding implications associated with that would be grouped under management. Corporate services, although the wedding talks to corporate services, this would include also the budget that is allocated to the Office of the CFO for both compensation of employees as well as the use of goods and services. And finally, on the office accommodation, this is in terms of the devolution arrangement that has been made with the Department of Public Works, where they facilitate the provision of acquiring of office accommodation, and they have an arrangement with the private organizations that own these properties, and we basically reimburse them once they have incurred the cost related to office accommodation. And then that concludes the presentation on the administrative program.
Thank you, folks.
on the outcomes of the audit and inspection, the inspector can either recommend the mining companies to improve their compliance levels, or they can stop inspection of the whole mine. Again, that depends on the outcome of those audits. And secondly, is that invariably in the mining industry, you do get accidents and incidents. One of our key activities was that the inspectors must go out and investigate the cause of those accidents and fatalities and make recommendations to prevent those accidents from happening again. And then lastly, last year, the Amendment Act came into effect, and currently we are busy with a number of projects to make sure that the amendments are adequately implemented. And one of the key issues is the new administrative fine system. And then moving to community issues, time and again we encounter problems with communities that live in close proximity to mine. And the major problem currently we are being faced with is the blasting that takes place in the mines that causes problems within the communities in terms of vibration, dust. So what we'll be doing, we'll be developing a comprehensive strategy to address these problems. In other ways, we'll be developing standards that the mines need to comply with when they do their blasting to make sure that they minimize the ground vibration as well as nuisance dust and noise that is polluted into the environment. And then lastly is that the branch is also developing and implementing a national seismic network. So what's happening currently is that the mining companies are having their own seismic network, right? And the department at the moment doesn't have the oversight in those systems. And once we have implemented this national seismic network system, the department is able to use that information to first monitor what's happening in the mine, and secondly also to use that information when there's been an accident on a mine to say you should have picked up these problems and taken necessary action to prevent accidents from happening. And then lastly is that the Management Safety Council also conducts quite a comprehensive research program to reduce fatalities and injuries in the mining sector. And also the Management Safety Council will be presenting to the PPC on Friday. So more information will be available on the research program from the council. This is the budget allocation for the mine health and safety inspectorate, and it's also slightly similar to what my colleagues have presented. As you can see, that for the current financial year, is that 140 million has been allocated for the compensation of employees. 26 million has been allocated for goods and services, and our major expenditure as the inspectorate under goods and services. Covering costs and accommodation costs for the inspectors. It was the problem here that costs in the process of their duties. And then thirdly is the capital assets, and that is the equipment that is used by inspectors in the course of their duties. And lastly is the transfers, and our transfers mainly go to the administrative support for the mine health and safety council, which is about 5.4 million. And then this slide presents the mine health and safety for the budget at the sub-program. The first sub-program is governance, policy and oversight, which covers mainly the head office expenditure. And then the balance of that is the regional office budget, which is 98 million. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, program 2, we look at program 3, my corporal call, Ramola.
Thank you, Mr. Dodd. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and members. Some of the key activities of from our operational plans as a branch, mineral regulation branch, apart from the handling or processing of applications in terms of the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act, are, for example, to monitor and enforce compliance. Now, here we've highlighted the social and labor plan inspections. These inspections relate to investigation and check on the implementation of the social and labor plan, and specifically the LED programs, which and the social and labor plans also, for example, include like bursary plans, plan for the retrenchment and downscaling and these things. This is just to inform you on what is embodied in basically in the social and labor plans. Now, the other key activity is mining charter inspections. This involves the broader spectrum of elements of the mining charter that are covered during these inspections. For example, we look at HRD programs, procurement, you know, the elements of the mining charter, housing and living conditions, reporting, these things. The other key activity is mining and prospecting work program inspections. Now, the prospecting and mining work program, they contain detail of how the company or the applicant is going to prospect or mine, the mining methods used, the time frames, the cost estimates, and the phases of prospecting and mining. The other one is environmental management plan inspections. It's all about the company or the applicant or the holder of the rights methods on how they're going to mitigate environmental negative environmental impacts and how they will manage the environmental issues. Other important activity is to reduce the state's environmental liability. Here is a big task on the mineral regulation branch, and we do that by identifying and prioritizing unsafe and unrehabilitated ownerless and derelict mines. I think you will hear from the presentation by my colleague Mr. Musa about new developments in this field. The regional offices of the branch and the department, by implication, play a very important role here in the identification of these mines and reporting it to head office, for example. The implementation of identified ownerless and derelict mine rehabilitation projects. There are projects currently in progress. Five of them, but I think you will hear more, as I said, from Mr. Musa perhaps on this. And a very important issue where the branch plays a role to reduce the state's liability is to ensure that the adequacy of financial provision for rehabilitation. Now, I think I reported in previous meetings that no application is finalized and no right is granted unless the department is satisfied that the applicant has provided for financial provision to cover for the rehabilitation of the mining area or prospecting area. And this is important for the branch to check on that it is adequate. With regard to the budget classification of the branch, for the 2010-11 financial year, the compensation of employees is 91.3 mil. The estimations for 2011 and 2012-13 is respectively 100.4 million and 106.25 million. In respect of goods and services, for the 2010-11 is 83.964 million, and I must just highlight here that this amount is inclusive of
funds that have been appropriated for the rehabilitation of derelict known as Nolan's mine. And for the 2010-11 and 2012 financial years, respectively 90.3 and 95.27 million. Then in respect of transfers for the 2010-11 financial year, is a figure of 40.643 million. And it is important to mention that these funds are for the operational functions of the South African Diamond and Precious Metal Regulator. Now, totals for the 2010-11 is 215.9 mil, 2011-12 233.0 million, and for the 2012-13 245.9 million. Now, breakdown as per the sub.
So sorry, just on the transfers, you were saying they are going to the regulator or to the state diamond trader or both? The 40 million?
No, these funds are for the regulator, Chair. For the regulator.
And the state diamond trader? Is it not provided?
It's not for the state diamond trader, Chair. The breakdown for management for the 2010-11 financial year is 5.78 million, 2011 6.132 million, and for the 2012-13 is 6.4 million. Now, for mineral regulation and administration, and here we refer to the operational issues of the regional offices, for example. Just for the information of the members, Honourable Chair, we also have the regional office in one in every province, but we do have two sub-regional offices, one in Rustenburg and one in Springbok. They report to Northwest and the Northern Cape Regional Office, respectively. It's 169 for the 2010 financial year, 169 million. And 2011-12 is 184.64, and for the 2012 is 195.0 million. Then, as quoted before, in respect of the South African Diamond and Precious Metal Regulator, for the 2010 year is 40.64, 42.29 million for the 2011, and 44.42 for the 2012-13 financial year, with totals for the 2010-11 financial year is 215 million, 2011 is 233.0, and for the 2012-13 financial year is 245.9 million rands. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. That covers problem three. And as we can see, the budget, the department is not very much project-driven as a regulator. Most of the resources are allocated for compensation of employees. We will look at program four. Mr. Mabuza, one.
Thank you, DG. Honorable Chair and members, good morning. I'll give an overview of the key activities of Program 4, Mineral Policy and Promotion. It is almost fortuitous that we are called Policy and Promotion. As you would see, members, we go beyond policy and promotion. We look at the environment as well as research and development. First area of focus is the mine environmental management. Honorable members, the Rehabilitation Oversight Committee was established in December last year, constituted, chaired by the branch Mineral Policy and Promotion, but also constituted by Mineral Regulation, Finance, Audit, Office of the DG, and Mineral Health and the Rehabilitation Oversight Committee was to place in sharp focus the rehabilitation of derelict and ownerless mines and the strategy for rehabilitation of these derelict and ownerless mines was adopted, signed off by the ministers in December 2008. The detailed rehabilitation action plan is being finalized, and we are also finalizing the implementation of the rehabilitation procedures, which we will table before honorable members in due course. On mine environmental management, we also assist particularly marginal mines with the pumping of excess water, underground water, which excess water in time in the research that we have been presented with has demonstrated that it has potential to present real challenges for the country going forward. And so it is absolutely important that we prevent any prospects of flooding of underground water. We are working on the contribution to the United Nations Commission on Sustainable Development proceedings, which will be held sometime next month, to enhance the image of the mining industry. We find that it is always difficult to find a balancing act between development and the environment, but we believe that the work that the department does seeks to find that balance, and we call that greening the mining industry. In respect of our focus on promotion of investment in the mineral sector, honorable members, we are finalizing the strategy for growth, for sustainable growth and transformation of the mining industry. It is our plan to have this strategy completed by end of June this year. We are focused on increasing levels of investment across the value chain of all the mineral commodities that we have, from exploration through mining and beneficiation. And one of the challenges that we are focused on facilitation of access, particularly for BEE coal miners, to not only the RBCT but other facilities, for them to be able to export the quality that qualifies for exporting. In dealing with our regulatory framework, we are at the advanced stage of finalizing the review of the mining charter. We shall be tabling the Geoscience Amendment Bill to yourselves. We're looking at reviewing the Diamond Amendment Act so that we can begin to de-bottleneck some of the challenges that we have identified, which would also allow us to strengthen those weaknesses we have identified in the structure of the industry. We're making provision to review the Minerals and Petroleum Resources Development Act in conjunction with our colleagues in mineral regulation. We would be conducting the regulatory impact assessment on a more frequent basis. And this is an area that our newly established Chief Directorate Economic Advisory Services would be focused on and working closely with our colleagues in mineral regulation.
research and development was the last one I alluded to. We have two entities that the branch we are responsible for, the Council for Geosciences, which is a repository of the national geological knowledge, as well as MINTEC, which conducts research on metallurgy and indeed beneficiation. Next slide, please. This is the allocation of the branch pay classification over the MTF period. You'd see, honorable members, the breakdown is the compensation of employees. The figures are there before you. You'll see the steady escalation over the period. The use of goods and services. We have not made provision for any capital assets in the branch. This is an area where the office of the CFO assists. And we have made we've made provisions for transfers, and we'll talk to those transfers in a moment. Next slide. This is the allocation per sub-program within the branch over the MTEF. The allocation for management, for the Mineral Policy Chief Directorate, the Mineral Promotion, or Mineral Policy, is that chair that is responsible for the regulatory framework. Mineral Promotion is the one that promotes the investments in the mining industry to increase the levels thereof and focus on addressing the inherent socioeconomic challenges. We've made assistance allocations for assistance to mines, and this is specific assistance in respect of pumping of water that I alluded to in the presentation. And part of the transfers is to the Council for Geoscience for the geological knowledge development of the country and use of that for the promotion of investment in the country. The next slide is the allocation for Council for Mineral Technology, MINTEC, and the next two are meant for the Economic Advisory Services Chief Directorate, alluded to, as well as the Mine Environmental Management. I thank you, members.
Thank you, Chair. That covers all the programs, program 1 up to 4. And the slide then gives just a broad overview of the budget allocation, $52 million on rehabilitation of ownerless and derelict mines, $302 million for state-owned entities, and mainly there's just Council for Geoscience and MINTEC, $145 million for mine health and safety program, $174 million on the implementation of the MPRPA, that is mineral regulation fund, and then $67 million for policy development review and investment promotion. And the last slide really just summarizes the vote allocation, indicating there the need to the encourage reading of the presentation, linking it to the medium-term strategic plan and the estimate for national expenditure. And then the budget that's presented, obviously containing expenditure estimates for the medium term, including transfers, as we have seen, almost 40% of the budget transfers to entities, leaving the department with $621 million for 2010-11, and the remainder of the MEPF period, those 2 years indicated there. And in conclusion,
we just a reflection when we look at the Minerals and Energy Department. I think we've gone for 5 years CFO with a clean audit report, and really the challenge for both departments, but in particular DMR, is to continue with that legacy, proper governance structures in place, and I think corporate services spoke to risk management initiatives around fraud and popularization of core values, and all those initiatives will continue to highlight the need for proper governance and continuing the legacy that the mother department, DME, carried for 5 years. And we know that with change, often you might have problems around governance, but we have plans in place, as the presentation indicates, that we will follow to make sure that things continue as planned. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you very much. This is quite detailed, and you've managed for our own benefit to basically unpack the, particularly the financial part of this presentation. But honorable members, there's the presentation. Let's engage with the presentation. Honorable Hululu, followed by Honorable Magagule, followed by Honorable Dexter, followed by Honorable Marais, Honorable Sonto. In that order, please.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me thank the department for the very right presentation of the budget vote. But before I support the budget vote, the Chair, I just want to seek clarity here on a few points here on the financial. Just seek clarity on the compensation of the employees. Whether is it salaries or what? Compensation. Okay. That is the first one. The second one is on the mine health and safety. On this R&D.
Chairperson, my question is that we understand that the new department at all, but actually we knew that it was the Department of Mineral and Energy. And then what I want to know is that in terms of the building, you shift and get the new building at all, or you just had some flaws in the same building that you were sharing with the Department of Energy. And another thing, you know, when you split, you were, I don't know how you were operating before, but when you split, sometimes the cars were written that Department of Mineral and Energy. So what do you do in terms of those equipment, cars, the vehicles that you were using as a department? Did you split terms of also the building, we knew that the building is from the public works. And then in terms of disaster management, and then, is it the Department of Public Works that gave the building without looking at the management of the disaster in the building, or just give it to the building and then you look at the management and the disaster that will be happening in that building? And then also, I didn't hear about the tree, understanding the budget. The budget itself is very low. I didn't hear about the training. You know, as a department, we need a lot of what we can say. We need a lot of the inspectors. But how did the department generate those inspectors? How did the department generate those technical people that will work for that department? And then I didn't hear that. And then actually, I want to know what happened on that level. And then I think it's only my chairperson. I think.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dexter.
How do you budget for that, and how much do you budget for that? And
lastly, Chairperson, on the community, I can't say it as elaborately as what you would say. Community safety, communities around mines, things like vibrations, blastings, and all that, you've identified some problems experienced by communities there. One would want off the cuff, what effect have those to this far had in those communities that are in the proximity of the operational mining industry? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Marais.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to confirm again with the Head of Corporate Services, if he can give us by the end of April the organigram of this department with the positions as been filled up to that time, the names and the email and the telephone numbers, if he can have it. Organigram of the whole department. And if there's a vacant position, you can stipulate vacant. And then secondly, I want to ask the acting DG if he's satisfied that this budget would be sufficient. He must confirm that today. And if we approve this budget, that we won't come back after 6 months and say we've got a problem, that we have to have additional funds. And thirdly, if this budget has been approved, then this is the budget that would be submitted to the Parliament, to the House, and we don't get in a situation that one of the other portfolio committees, he presented a certain budget, and when it was actually put forward to be adopted, it was being increased without being again back to the portfolio committee. I must make sure that you must give that assurance to me. And, for the moment, that's it.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Can we allow the department to then respond, after which we will take tea and come back for the second round of questions? Please, acting DJ.
Thanks, Chairperson, and honorable members, for the questions which we'll seek to clarify. The different colleagues around the table will respond to the questions relevant to their area. But maybe to start with the last questions from Honorable Marais, I think the Director General has made a commitment at the last presentation that the structure will be made available, and I'm sure that will be done. George will follow up on that. On the assurance, yes, with the identified activity that's presented by the different programs, we're comfortable that the budget will address the issues identified and presented to the committee. The CFO, can you cover the financial issues?
Just to add to your response on that question on the adequacy, I think Honorable Marais indicated whether,
also sought to understand whether there wouldn't be any change. I think in terms of the budgeting process that has been adopted, the only time that we could really come back here would be during the adjustment budget, in case there are unforeseen issues that we couldn't have, you know, included in this budget. So if there are changes, it would only be through that process. So as an indicated, we are comfortable that we have made sure that there is alignment between our budget and the activities that we put in our operational plan. I will start with the questions from Honorable Fololo on the compensation, whether this comprises only salaries or there are other things included. This primarily includes salaries as well as service benefits that our employees are entitled to, as well as some of the reimbursive expenses, like, for example, travel. question whether we are talking about we are moving into a new building. Yes, the department, while we were still Minerals and Energy, we had already identified a challenge in terms of the adequacy of the office space that we are currently occupying. So there was already this project that we had started working on of acquiring new office accommodation. It just so happened that the split happened while we were in the middle of that process. So what we had to then go and do was to try and change our plan that we had originally made based on the DM instructions so that we can then accommodate both the Department of Energy as well as Mineral Resources within the same office campus. So both the two departments are relocating. In fact, the Department of Energy has partially relocated to the new premises, and then Mineral Resources will be following in May. So we are relocating to a new building. And then the treatment of assets, particularly vehicles that are marked, we have, in line with the new structure, identified assets that have been ring-fenced and transferred to the Department of Energy and those that would stay within Mineral Resources. So it would naturally follow that the issues like registration of vehicles would have to be updated with the Department of Transport, where it used to say DME, it would now either say Mineral Resources or Energy. So we are in the process of sorting out those details. And of course, if there is a sticker, we haven't gone to that extent where our vehicles are marked with a sticker indicating that this is so it wouldn't be presenting a challenge in that area. And then on the issue of disaster management, I think I would like to just highlight that we're looking at this from a different level. The disaster management, in as far as the occupancy of the building is concerned, becomes a joint responsibility between the landlord and the tenant, in this case the department, wherein we would have to comply with the safety regulations in terms of, you know, having proper evacuation plans in the building and having, you know, educated our people in terms of what you do when there's an emergency, when there's a fire. But of course, in terms of providing those facilities, honorable members would agree that even before the building is certified for occupation, the inspectors would have come in and ensured that in the event of a disaster, there wouldn't be challenges in terms of evacuating. But what we were presenting here was looking more at, from an information management point of view, should there be a fire in the building and everything is burned down, will the department be able to continue to operate? Will we have access to all our information systems and the data that resides within those systems? So that is the second part that we were mainly focusing on in terms of the presentation today. But that other part is catered for in terms of planning for the accommodation. And then the training budget, we haven't flagged it here, but just to give comfort to the committee, there is provision for training to the tune of 4.2 million rand, which is well within the 1% requirement that 1% of our salary bill needs to be made available for training purposes. So we've done that. But over and above that, there are other specific programs, like, for example, in the minor business, where they focus on training of inspectors. We run a specific program on that particular area. And then the other issue, the asterisk on the use of goods and services, apologies, the question from Honorable Son. On the mineral regulation or program 3, the asterisk, if members look below the slide, at the bottom of the slide rather, there is an explanatory note that basically links the asterisk to the
explanation down below, which is just meant to indicate that figure includes funds that have been earmarked for the purpose of rehabilitation of derelict and ownerless mines.
The last question on the basis for budgeting for condolences. We do share your concern in terms of, you know, how what is the best basis. We haven't found one yet, but what we do is we just look at historical information and try and work on the basis of that, with the understanding that that could change because no one can predict this kind of event. But just to also add, honorable members, one thing that we missed out, and I must apologize for this, that budget figure also includes payments in respect of leave for those employees that are leaving the department. But what you would find is that by the time all the processes are finalized, they are no longer active on the system. So they get processed as transfer payments. So we budget for that as a separate line item. So the major part of that goes to those leave payments for employees who have terminated services with the department. Thanks,
CFO. I think CFO has covered most of the questions. We will get the mine health and safety, some policy to deal with the seismic questions and communication.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I'll be responding to two questions. The first one will be on training of inspectors, as well as the effects of mining on communities, and my colleague will respond on the seismic network. Starting with the training of inspectors, I'll start from the bottom up, is that we've got a program where we recruit people that study at universities and technicals, and the department pays for their accommodation and tuition. And once those individuals have graduated from technicals and universities, then we sort of put them into an internship or an experiential training program where they're able sort of to get work experience at the coal space. And then moving from there, we've also got training programs for inspectors which we have established with the Perth University and the Mining Qualifications Authority that covers all inspectors that are within the inspectorate. And then lastly, Mr. Moon also added that we've also got the training programs like management development programs within the department. So that is the training pipeline for our inspectors to make sure that we've got sufficient inspectors and competent inspectors in the department. And then coming to the effects of mines to the communities, the challenge many a time is that many townships will often encroach or develop towards the mine. And our plan is that we need to come up with the standards that mines need to comply to when they do their blasting. Because when you blast, there are sort of three main effects. The first one is the ground vibration, right, which can cause cracks to houses. And then secondly is the noise from the blast, right, that can also cause vibration like windows, like intense vibration to windows. And then lastly is the dust that is emitted from the blast, especially on open cast mines. So our intention is to sort of come up with something to say that if a mine is sort of in this close proximity to a township or any sort of housing development, they need to make sure that their sort of ground vibration must be at this level or this standard to make sure it doesn't cause any damage to those houses. So my colleague will respond on the seismic network question.
For you, Chair, quick one.
No.
Just a quick one on that,
yes.
One. How possible is that, perhaps? Can you control that blasting vibration? Perhaps the geoscientists amongst yourselves who can developmental encroachment towards mining areas for communities?
Chair, if I can respond to that, I think the amendment of the CGS Act will address the issue. Currently, there is that initiative for township development where applications come through the system. We look at them. However, the challenge is that it doesn't happen all the time. And I think as some Thomas has indicated, in some of these areas where we have problems, you find that these developments took place while the mining was already there. So there's a need to do work in that particular area. But it's an established science. I mean, in other jurisdictions, for example, in the U.S., extensive research has been done around that, how the waves travel because of the vibration, and clearly stipulate, given the ground condition in a particular area, how far building structures should be from mining operations. So definitely that's the work that the health and safety component is looking at in improving regulation. But CGS Act will improve that coordination because also it links to local government and how you deal with development.
Okay. thank you, Chairperson. Coming back to the question by Honorable Hololo regarding issues of seismicity, the question was, does it mean that you can detect seismicity before it can strike? The answer to that question is that, unfortunately, at this stage, that is not what the project intends to cover. However, as indicated, that this work will then assist us in the following areas. We are going to be able to gain access to this information on seismicity, but that during our inspection effort, we can be able to engage with the mine management or the mine owners regarding the issues of seismicity on what measures that the mines are taking such that the impact of seismicity is minimized whenever it occurs. This might improved support systems or removing of employees to safer areas such that when a seismicity impact happens, people are not in an area that is much more dangerous. And again, during our investigation, when after the effect, you will find that the mines will provide you with information regarding the seismicity related issue. At that point in time, it makes it difficult for us as inspectors because that information is now provided at a later stage, and we don't really have the opportunity to engage with it earlier on. So I think this way we'll then try and address that because we'll be able to get the information prior and we can act proactively before this problem occurs.
I think we're left with one question, fraud prevention. Corporate services will assist.
Just a response to the question from Honorable Sonder with regards to how often the fraud prevention projects will be conducted and how well can we measure the success of such endeavors. I might start by explaining that the risk management strategy and fraud prevention strategy have two main components. One is the code of conduct and fraud prevention, which states basically the kind of behavior that would be required of public servants, and the whistleblowing framework, which indicates to an individual or an employee the route that they can employ any resolution to such matters reported. Now, obviously, you know, right now we might not know exactly, you know, the extent of knowledge of the people on the ground. So after we've carried out this project, we might find that the instances of, you know, people reporting, you know, issues might rise. And that in itself could be a measure of success. But obviously you'd have to monitor it over a considerable period and look at the issues raised and the, how they've been resolved in order for us to get an understanding of, you know, what is happening on the ground. And that will enable us to manage the process.
Members, I know we still have quite a lot of questions. Let's break for tea for 10 minutes. Let's be back here at 11, and then we'll have a second round in terms of engaging with the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable members, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We can take the second bite in terms of follow-up questions and new questions that we would want to raise on the matter before us. Over to you. Whilst you are thinking, let me do the following. I think the for you, I think DJ and you and your delegation. There was a question that was raised regarding the organogram. I'm not sure whether you said you would come back to us on that, or are you ready to can deal with that right now? Because this apparently speaks to the successful split of the department, as you indicated to us last time, that by the 1st of April, the department would be fully fledged. So that's one question. I would want to get your indication as to that effect. But also there are fundamental issues. Firstly, in terms of the ownerless and derelict mines, the rehabilitation thereof, we see that there is this amount that is provided for in the budget. But earlier on, in our previous engagement, you have indicated that you would need plus minus 30 billion rand to can be able to deal effectively with the issue of the rehabilitation of these derelict and ownerless mines. And then it's becoming more urgent. As early as this morning in the media, the whole question of water pollution is out there in the public domain. The Department of Environment and Water Affairs has actually put out an advert where they are inviting people to inform the department on the impact of water pollution through mines. Now, I'm sure that speaks to these ownerless and derelict mines, but also mining in general, because there was
in the public domain that there will be increase in water tariffs. We're heading towards a serious crisis in terms of water shortages. Hence, the minister, you know, in her budget vote yesterday was able to basically explain that away. But the fact remains is that there is a concern around the pollution of water, particularly by mining industry. So I'm saying that for the figure that you provided for here in the next 3 years is seriously a drop in the ocean. It doesn't even make a billion. And hence you said you wanted 30 billion rand. What is your, you know, solution going forward in terms of dealing with this situation? Secondly, both on the mineral regulation, to an extent mineral policy, but also in the main, in mine health and safety. You're making reference to inspectorate, the inspections that must be conducted, the implementation of the acts, compliance with the charter, compliance with the mine health and safety. It's a huge challenge. When you look only at the mining charter alone, if anything is correct in terms of what has been leaked to the media, we read on Sunday that you know, you have a report in your possession and you don't want to tell the public and to tell us, but here, the media, they were boasting that they do have a copy of that report. It was linked to them and they went to town. If you address the weekend newspapers, particularly on the almost the entire page devoted by the City Press to that situation. But then when you look at that, and also understanding the requirements of the charter, you then, you know, appreciate the fact that that's mammoth task, because it does mean that you must go into mining companies and literally inspect whether they are meeting, you know, they are complying with the provisions of the law. Therefore, my question is, how many inspectors are in training currently? How many inspectors have you got currently? And how many inspectors do you need in order for you to feel that you have a full complement that can assist all of us to basically monitor the compliance of all the laws and the policies that are within your administration as DMR. And also in your human resource development, you spoke about the strategy for the retention of human resources, but you have not unpacked it for us, because always your challenge has been the remuneration part of your professionals. You do attract them, fair enough, but at all material times they come and use the department as the basis for them to acquire experience and then jump off to greener pastures. Now, what kind of retention strategies have you worked out, particularly relating to the remuneration part? Because you can train, but then at the end of the day, if you cannot retain them, you will be found wanting when it comes to enforcing the compliance with the law. Can you respond to those for now, and maybe I'll come back with that?
Thanks, Chair. On the organogram, I think we had made an undertaking that we'll submit an organogram document. Mr. Mguni, heading the HR, undertook to send the document. I think it was supposed to be sent on the first. Okay. So Mr. Mguni will address the concern. Yeah. And then on the derelict, just a comment on the derelict.
Sorry, indeed. Mr. Mguni doesn't seem to be clear on what is required.
I think he was outside. Thanks, Chair. So on the derelict and ownerless mine, Mr. Mabuza will assist us, but before he does that, I just wanted to comment that the indicated figure of 30 billion, I think, came out of the study that was conducted by CGS as an indication of the burden on the state to rehabilitate all identified mines, derelict and ownerless mines. So obviously that program will take a number of years. I mean, I remember when we presented, if you work it out, really, given the current budget allocation, it will take us half a century to rehabilitate all the mines. But safe to say that currently we're purely working on the budget that has been allocated. I think we've gone through the recession. And having gone through the recession, the country with its priorities, national priorities, we do put requests, and the amount that is allocated is the one we're able to apply in the different areas. And Mr. Mabuza will talk to you.
Thank you, DG, Honorable Chair, members. Just also in addition to what the DG has just alluded to, is that I just wish to place in context that the 52 million is the current allocation, and given the priority of some of the sites that have got to be looked at, we cannot wait until we get appropriate allocation. The CFO did indicate that the only assurance we have is the allocation of this current financial year, 2010-2011, as to what the allocations will be going forward would be a subject of the various iterations of the work and motivations that will be putting together in and among all the other priorities that that government has. It is indeed our intention to use however minimum this amount is, as we recognize, to begin to address some of the immediate challenges that this derelict and ownerless mines has prioritized. In the strategy, we have begun to prioritize those sites that should be immediately given attention to. And again, that 30 billion is the whole figure. There is more work that needs to be that we are currently doing to look at the apportioning of the various figures. And with time, if you allow us, Chair, we are doing more work, firstly, to have a better understanding. It is a huge task, but with some of the research work that we are continuing to do, we are gaining more and more understanding of the derelict and ownerless mines and the extent of the problem, and secondly, we're looking at modalities of funding this amount. I mean, if you allow me to just set out one example, some of the mines other than asbestos, which would have been mined, say, and abandoned 80 years ago, the technology that was applied at that time was unable to extract all of the minerals, from the dump site and so on. Technology has moved on today. And so some of these derelict and ownerless mines are actually, we are promoting them as low-hanging fruits for those who want to come into the mining industry, so that if they begin to take responsibility for extracting those minerals, then they will be part of the rehabilitation that they would have to undertake. And so that way we begin to have a comprehensive program that would not necessarily equate the
department is working very hard towards a better understanding of how much would be required, and will be putting forth the propositions to National Treasury as and when the picture unfolds. Thank you very much, Chair and Mutiji.
Thanks, Martha. Just turning attention to the, I think the inspectors, I think Mtogazi will assist us on the mine health and safety, and Mike will touch on the regulation inspection in terms of numbers and so on.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members, and DG. The Chairperson has raised a very critical issue, the matter of coverage by our inspectors. And what we have done going forward is that we have sort of prioritized the inspectors that we need, especially in the health field, which is mainly occupational health and hygiene. Our plan is to increase the number of inspectors, mainly in the bigger regions, because I identify from that we don't have sufficient coverage when it comes to health, mainly in the bigger regions. The second priority would be the engineers, and there I refer to both electrical and mechanical engineers, and they have got quite a high sort of shortage of those inspectors. And I think
around times that the department actually committed.
figures, the final figures, are not known at the moment. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I think that covers the three questions. There was one on the strategy for the case, which Mr. Mguni will have to discuss.
Thank you, Chairperson. We do have a recruitment and retention strategy for employees in the Department of Mineral Resources, but specifically for inspectors. I must say that we are currently working in partnership with the Department of Public Service and Administration to deal with inspectors of mines as a separate occupational group, and them having specific benefits that are attached to their work. Because remember, as inspectors, an inspector is somebody that does not only have the relevant qualification. It is somebody who also has post qualification experience, who will be in a position to can inspect the work of those that are qualified within the mining arena. So we have consulted with DPSA to say that they should have a separate occupational specific dispensation. But internally, we have also looked at the environment, because when we conducted our exit interviews, it became very clear that the working environment is also key to retention of our employees. Hence, we're speaking of the new building, not only in headquarters, but even outside. And in terms of the incentives, all our inspectors are being remunerated from level 9 upwards, and which is, a level at the assistant director level, whereas, the entry rank, in other occupational groupings, it's either level 7 for those persons who have post-matric qualifications, but for inspectors specifically, we're starting them at level 9. We've also introduced, a training program, because for you to retain people, you have to show interest in their growth, not growth in terms of rank, but in terms of expertise. So we are also focusing on that, hence we've introduced a number of developmental programs, and also the management, because one area that is key is that people should be managed properly. If your managers are not trained enough, the subordinates feel very uncomfortable. Hence we have introduced a management development program, and a number of our senior managers have attended that program. Hence, they are in a position to manage. We've also introduced special awards, with a monetary value, that is attached to recognition above average performance, and we do pay them, cash bonuses and so on. Thank you, Chair.
Follow-ups, let's start with Honorable
McKevin,
Honorable
Rose,
Honorable
Makagula. Yeah, mine is the concern. I don't know whether it's the out of order. I just wanted to find out from department that would it be possible for department to provide portfolio committee with a list of beneficiaries of the money?
Is that clear?
Yeah, beneficiation, because I think with all mines in our country, there's a beneficiation, the owner of the mine. The owner, in any case, that is of the mine.
I'm sure that would relate to the report on how far down the line have you implemented your beneficiation strategy. I'm sure that question could be answered out of that. In terms of what minerals are being beneficiated, I'm sure that the list might not have that information readily available now, but I think in the program, which I hope you will have a copy of before leaving, we do provide for, we devoted some time to deal extensively with the issue. But for the benefit of the member, if you can just provide that information in terms of what commodities are currently being beneficiated, that is.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think the presentation in its entirety is at a planning stage. Planning stage, therefore, that is suggesting that the attached figures would make the department to operationalize the plan that is presented here. But if say, for instance, we want to exercise our oversight role and the department wants to measure its performance, I think the tools of trade should have also been indicated, so that should the budget be what is the term that you are using? Should the budget be allocated to the department as per expressed need, then we're able to operationalize it. My interpretation is to say it cannot be now, it cannot be today. But we would want as the committee a situation where when we meet, we say when we met last time, your presentation was at a planning stage and you wanted this amount of money to operationalize your plan. These were your targets. These were your tools of trade. How far did you go, therefore, as the department? So that we see whether we go forward or we're standing still or we're moving sideways. I think it's a comment of that nature that perhaps I would make a chairperson, so that we assist each other in the department. And it's in line with what you said, chairperson, that when we go out there, we should go out there with, in the main, the information that we have received from the department, coupled with our own information as the committee. So I think if we can plan our strategic approach to all these responsibility in that manner, I think it can assist us, so that when we meet, we know yesterday we were there, and we plan to be here. When we meet again, we could not be here because of these obstacles that we came across. I think that is how we can measure ourselves. One little interest that I would want to have on the health inspectorate, when we talk about ownerless and derelict mines, do we include these asbestos-producing mines? And if we still have those mines, the health inspectors, what is their view on the production of asbestos, given its history, insofar as health is concerned? Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Honorable Magazine. Chairperson, something that I was want to say here, I've been dropped by Honorable Tinto. But Chairperson, I just tendering to move for the adoption of this presentation. And it's only that, Chairperson.
Okay. Can we respond to those follow-up questions? And see if there are any other questions, and then we will give you the way forward after that.
country or the asbestos situation?
Yes, I think Intogatis will assist us, but in, according to my understanding, I don't think we have an operating asbestos mine as we speak. The issue is just the old establishment that we're dealing with.
I think that's correct, because the last mine was closed in 2001, the last asbestos mine. But also after that, at the time you had the Department of Environment and Tourism, they have, in conjunction with the trade and industry, developed a policy that banned effectively the use of asbestos in the country, because what was discovered was that whilst the last mine was closed in 2001, the asbestos containing goods were imported for particularly construction industry from outside of South Africa, particularly from Zimbabwe. And as a result, whilst we were saying we dealt with the issue of asbestos-related, occupational diseases and exposure. But then we were continuously exposing our workforce, particularly in the construction, transport, and I think motor producing, vehicle producing industries through those imported, asbestos-containing goods. So those departments, therefore, gazetted a policy to effectively, ban the use and the handling of asbestos. All what we're doing now is that through our ports, in terms of your efforts, there are specific strict instructions in terms of how the packaging of goods that are being exported by those countries via our ports have to be, if they don't meet those standards, then they get sent back. Before the workers can even touch goods that have got asbestos. And indeed, we are now dealing with the leakage, of asbestos. Three last questions. One is on this, your monitoring of the state-owned enterprises. Are you participating in the process that was announced by the president in terms of reviewing the state-owned enterprises holistically, or is this still along the same lines that these were established? Just to have a sense whether the mandate still remains the same or there's possibility that it could change. But also, a worrying factor is the whole question of the assistance to marginal mines. You have made budgetary provisions here for the water pumping. Why must it be the state's responsibility to carry this expense on mines that are operating? Is it because they are profitable? What is the motivational effect? Is this not part of their license condition that they must provide for, the environmental, situation, including the treatment of mine acid water. Lastly, coming back to this question of state diamond trader, no allocation whatsoever. I've just been trying to peruse your presentation and I cannot find it. It's just a regulator that has been provided for. Well, why is that so? Because this is an entity created in terms of the statute books. And if you remember, we have rejected as this committee the annual report precisely because of the challenges that we have seen. And if there are no budgetary provisions for that entity, then it means it's being set up to fail completely. And are you aiming to close it down? And if you do so, what does that do to beneficiation in our approach, as well as the transformation in as far as the new entrants in the diamond industry in particular? So we just want clarity there, because you seem to be not
budget allocation, and Mr. Mabuza will talk to the funding model issues around that.
Thank you.
Oh, Mabuza, you... Then we took a step back and said the state diamond trader just as one intervention perhaps is not enough. We need to look at the entire industry. We need to look at the entire industry and look at issues of security of supply and enhancing security of supply. And the state diamond trader is indeed one of those interventions that are intended to enhance the security of supply for beneficiation in South Africa, with particular focus to bringing into the mainstream those who were previously excluded. And so we want to ensure that our developmental case is indeed properly aligned to the bigger industry and as we see it, and I'm sure that in the next few months we will be able to present a tangible result to you and the committee. Mr.
Okay. I'm going to add on to that.
Budget process. I think, as my colleague indicated, the review of the business plan or the funding model. We last year when we were busy with the budget process, looking at this budget that we are presenting here today, we had not finalized that process. So, in the next cycle, if we find that that developmental model that we are now looking at is suggesting a partial funding model where the state contributes a portion, then we'll be able to go with a proposal to the treasury to say this is what we have now approved as the final funding model that supports or underpins the business case of the state diamond trade. But maybe just to give comfort to the committee in terms of the quarterly reports that we've been getting from them, I think up to the end of December of last year, the situation as a trader seems to be stable. They are, you know, floating above the water level. They've adopted a new approach where they only buy on the basis of a guarantee from a potential buyer, and that is helping them in terms of ensuring that the cash flow situation is dealt with.
Thanks, Chair. So I think the reason I'd asked the CFO because the allocation will have to be made on the basis of a business plan, and in the absence of that work having been finalized, it would have been very difficult to make that allocation.
let's finalize this one. I think, you know, this question now links to what Honorable Mare had asked you, you know, emphatically, as to whether are we not likely to get surprises in the midterm, you know, this financial year. I think what you are raising is that there is that possibility, because there's one of your state-owned entities that is not funded in terms of the current budget, and that you are going to go to Treasury to seek additional funding once the business case has been sorted out. I want you to reconfirm that, so that when you come back to us, we don't treat you in the same fashion that the other portfolio committee is likely to treat the other, you know, departments that, you know, fluctuated figures in between the presentation and the actual, you know, submission of the what you call. But Mr. Mabuza, on the 5th of May, in terms of our program, we would be discussing the state-owned, the state diamond trader and the regulator, their strategic plan, but also we say other outstanding matters which arise out of their annual report, which were not approved by the committee. We would be grateful if we get an indication in that date in terms of, I don't know whether that's a short term, but 5th of May is just around the corner. Of where exactly do you want to be? Because we have been approached by the diamond industry, both established and small operators. They raise in frustration pertaining to the state diamond trader. We've tried to alert the leadership of the state diamond trader to those, to some of those, and hopefully. By the 5th, they would provide us with some answers. I don't know. But indeed, as long as it is legally an entity that is there, we are responsible for oversight on that. So if we pass this budget, we must pass it with very clear understanding that when we go out there, we're not found wanting on some of the entities that we are supposed to exercise oversight on. Hence, I'm highlighting the 5th of May as a provision in our program that would request you to come and address us. Because it's pointless, really, to capacitate and resource fully the regulator. And the next thing, you don't have the state diamond trainer. That regulator to do what? If you do not have yet a vehicle that they must regulate. So it's a bit of an anomaly, but let's talk about that on the 5th of May so that we flag it for now. Yes, the other question.
We take those comments. We note the comments. And I think just to on the question around the budget, I think our response was well guarded. The CFO has made it clear that when it comes to the midterm adjustment, we'll come to the committee. And also in my response, I made it clear that in terms of the activities that indicated in the presentation, we're comfortable that the budget presented here will be able to address the issues. Mr. Mabuza, can you assist us with the assistance to mine for water pumping?
Thank you, DG. Honorable Chair, members. The motivation for assistance to mine is placed within this context, that if you look at the Vets Gold mining basin, this is a basin that has been mined for almost 125 years. And there is a lot of interconnected channels underneath, within which the water ingresses, and all this risks of flooding and acid mine drainage basin, which happened to be connected to that huge infrastructure underneath, that still has mineralization in which some of these junior mining companies would then come in and see potential for mining, creating employment, decent jobs, and so on. So if you then look at it in that context, that what would be, in fact, let me put it in the other way and say, what would be the cost to state if we did not spend 36 million rand of public? And the answer to that would be a couple of trillion rand and many, many lives in the process and health implications and so on. So it's a question of putting up a smaller figure to mitigate the potential impact of what could happen while we are looking for a permanent solution. We have not, and we have not found a permanent solution yet, but we have created structures such as the GTT, the Government Task Team on Environment. It is chaired by the department, by my colleague to my right. In that task team, there is Department of Environment, and Water Affairs and Environment. There is the Department of Science and Technology, and there is the Council for Geoscience. And this is a task team that is dedicated at looking for permanent solutions. They do have a few proposals for further research that will bring about that permanent solution. But in the short term, it is inevitable that we make such provision, delay the potential impact, but in the process, create opportunities for exploitation of those relict mineralization zones and create jobs for those areas. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
The last question on monitoring of state-owned entities, corporate services will assist us with that.
We haven't, or let's say we are still engaging with the terms of reference from the presidency, and to look at those in terms of the relevance of the mandates of the entities as they are at the moment. So when we say monitoring, we are looking at them in terms of looking at the current strategic plans and budgets and adherence thereto going through the year.
Honourable members, I think that exhausts the engagement with the report. Am I correct? Are there any further questions? Okay. There is a request that after adjourning this meeting, we will remain, all members will remain behind. And let us thank the department for having engaged with us on the matter. Going forward, on Friday, we are meeting you on the mine health and safety. We're going to sound the views of the members now. The likelihood would be that in terms of the program, we've made provision that we will discuss this report and your strat plan with a view of taking a decision before the actual budget vote date on the 22nd. If we are comfortable, we may do that on Friday so that members can prepare themselves for the actual debate on the budget vote, using even including the date of the 21st to basically deal with that. So immediately after this brief interaction, we will call you as the DG, so that if we are to deal with this on Friday, then we would request that even if it's a small delegation, be here accompanying that mine health and safety unit, so that we are able to then deal with this matter as well. And that it would also save you some cost of coming back here on the 21st of April. But it's dependent on what we are going to talk about now among ourselves as members. But we are looking at short-circuiting the process, because your budget is speaking more to your strategic plan. You've set the target. We're interested to see how do you then satisfied because members have raised the question of targets and all of that, so we would talk around that. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you also for the interaction we've had, your clear answers that you have provided. Safe to say that matters that you said you would come back to us on, we would very much like